For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome. I want to talk this morning primarily about the karma of Zen, the strengths and weaknesses of the tradition of Japanese Zen that we have inherited. And this is based on a talk, one of the keynote talks given last week at the Soto Zen Buddhist Association conference that I attended, given by Dale Wright, who's a professor of religion and philosophy, although he specializes in East Asian Buddhism. He's at, I think, Occidental College in Southern California. But first I want to say a little bit about, I attended two Soto Zen teachers conferences, actually, last week at Great Vow Monastery in Oregon, downstream a ways from Portland. So I want to say a little bit about those and what they are. So the context is we are an independent Zen temple, and but we have lots of affiliations. But it's very different from, for example, the Catholic Church or most Protestant denominations. We don't have a formal hierarchy that we're connected to in the same way, but we are affiliated and connected to Soto Zen, which is one of the main branches of Japanese Zen, and American Zen generally in various ways. So I want to say a little bit about that before I talk about the karma of Zen. So the Soto Zen Buddhist Association is an organization of authorized Dharma teachers in American Soto Zen, which I'm a member of. It meets every 2 years. I believe there are 120 members total. There are also associate members, those who are ordained but not yet transmitted Dharma teachers, like Aishin and Keizan, also one of our other priests, attended as associate members. There were 68 members at this conference, which again meets every other year. 27 of them were inducted in what's called a Dharma Heritage Ceremony. So they were received transmission, not necessarily within the last year, but they had not yet become official members of Soto Zen Buddhist Association. So we had this fairly formal ceremony in which they are inducted as members. Again, they're required to have received Dharma transmission from their teachers. We have a lot of new people here this morning, which is great. So I'm just kind of giving a sketchy background of how we're connected to the rest of American Soto Zen. In addition to that Soto Zen Buddhist Association meeting, there was following it a meeting of the, one is SCBA, the other one is ASCB. It sounds almost the same. The Association of Soto Zen Buddhists is those teachers affiliated, as I am, with the Japanese Sotoshu. So they had a somewhat shorter conference immediately following. And that's a smaller subset of the people who were in the SCBA, and a few additional ones, but representing our strong connection to Japan. So those are people who've done the Zuisen, it's called in Japanese, ceremony, which is sort of like being abbot for a day at Eiheiji and Sojiji, the two Soto Zen headquarters temples in Japan, which I did in 2008. So this Dharma Heritage Ceremony is supposed to be the American equivalent, and part of one of the main topics was for the conference, not the only one, but developing a set of standards. So there are already some standards or requirements. We're supposed to have an ethics statement or policy for each temple, which we do, and authorized Dharma transmission. But one of the big issues is, what are the standards for accepting teachers into the Soto Zen Buddhist Association? And there are a lot of issues. There are many monastic temples, residential temples, and there's a strong tradition in Soto Zen of teachers having done significant periods of monastic training, and a lot of people find that very important. But then there are other temples, probably certainly the majority of Soto Zen places like ours that are non-residential lay centers for people to come and have a chance to hear the Dharma and do Zazen practice. And so anyway, one of the other issues was ministerial training and what are the standards for that. Anyway, this is a long process which is in the middle, which is happening, and we're working on, and we'll be working on until the next meeting in a couple of years. But this is just to say that we are connected to these other Soto Zen groups, and also later Roy will speak about Branching Streams, which is a meeting of affiliates of San Francisco Zen Center in the Suzuki Roshi lineage. That's where I was trained, and Roy represented us at a meeting of that group recently. So that's just a little bit of background, but I wanted to talk primarily about comment on and report on this talk that I thought was very interesting that Dale Wright gave. He's a professor of religion and philosophy and has edited a number of the collections of books together with Stephen Hine, who's been here several times. About Zen koan and Zen rituals and Zen masters and Zen canon. I contributed chapters to a couple of those books. So I know Dale for a long time, but he has a background in Western philosophy as well as Eastern religion, and he talked about the karma of, I think he was talking about Japanese Zen generally, and he presented his view of strengths and weaknesses and challenges for American Zen, given the karma, as he put it, of Japanese Zen. So that's what I want to talk about mostly this morning. So he had a list of strengths. He had 11 in that list, a long list. He had a list of weaknesses, and he had three, and then he had a list of challenges. I want to go over these at least briefly. So one of the strengths of Japanese Zen is, as he put it, is that it takes practice seriously. From Dale's perspective, more than any other religion, Zen takes practice, actual religious practice, seriously, mostly in the form of Zazen, as an exemplary practice, what we've just done here, this upright sitting meditation. So that's, he finds that important in a strength, that we have this physical practice. And I would say that part of my own interest in Zen, what brought me to Zen, was that there was actual physical practice. So when I started more than 35 years ago, that just that there was some physical regular practice that that this centered on. Another one he said is that this practice, another of the strengths is that the practices of Zen, including Zazen, develop qualities of character, that the practices, both sitting meditation and the practices of expressing the meditative awareness in our everyday activity, develops excellence of human life in practitioners and supporting those around them. Another one of the strengths was, so I'm looking at my notes, that Zen mind is not local. That it's not focused on one particular thing. That that there is a deepening of anything connected with Zen mind. So I feel this very strongly in terms of how much I enjoy our Sangha of many wonderful, talented people busy in various ways out in the world in Chicago, and that Zazen supports whatever we do in our everyday activities, in our regular life, in terms of relationships and work and our connection with people around us. So that was another one. Fourth was, Dale thought that Zen is more thorough in rejecting otherworldliness than any other religion. That there is a tradition, we can look at the tradition of Zen lay people like Vimalakirti, but that Zen is not focused on escape from this world, reaching some other state of being or realm. That Zen, more than other, and he said any other religion, you know, we could debate that, but that Zen is focused on not depending on transcendence, but on actually activities in this world, and seeing the wonder and joy and spiritual qualities of this world we're in now. The fifth on Dale's list was that there are no list of required beliefs. That there are many teachings, many scriptures in Buddhism, and there are many basic teachings, but it's not that there's some doctrine or dogma that one has to take totally to do Buddhist meditation, to do Buddhist practice, to be a Buddhist even. He cited Stephen Batchelor, who's written a lot recently, one of the fine Buddhist scholar, about Buddhism Without Beliefs, I think is one of the names of name of one of his books. This led to a long discussion about rebirth and many aspects. Bless you. Anyway, that was his fifth. Sixth is that Zen is not in conflict with science, unlike some other religions. That Zen is, in some sense, an empirical practice, a rational practice that respects science, and that, you know, there are many different aspects of this Zen. And in terms of how it's arriving in the West, in many ways is interacting with Western science in terms of psychology, in terms of neurobiology. One might also cite His Holiness the Dalai Lama from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, who very much supports, who has said that if there's any Buddhist teaching that is in conflict with science, it should change. It should change the teaching. So this is another one of what Dale sees as a list of, in his list of strengths. And I do want to have time to discuss this and any questions you have about this. It will not be a test, by the way. But I thought this list that Dale presented is interesting. The seventh one is that Zen has a focus on freedom. And by that, we can talk a lot about Buddhist liberation and principles of freedom and participatory democracy, whatever's left of that in the United States, but it's one of our principles. But he also talked about it in terms of personal freedom, having an open mind, the quality of relaxed spontaneity, which is part of the Zen tradition. And the process of Zen practice, both in meditation and off our cushion, of looking at how to deepen freedom, how to express and expand freedom both in our own hearts and in the world around us. So that's another aspect. Eighth on his list was, and these are all interesting, and I kind of agree with all of these as strengths of Zen. Zen playfulness. That the tradition of Zen has a great sense of humor, that there's a quality of Zen, and we see it in many of the great Zen masters who actually had this great sense of humor, and in a lot of the literature and the koan stories where there's this kind of release of anxiety and a great letting go. So again, this is a strength of Zen as a religion. The eighth one he had is the principle in Zen of going beyond the teacher. That part of Zen transmission is that in some way it's not enough to be equal with the teacher in terms of authorizing successors to teachers, but and even for all of us to go beyond your Dogen talks about, Dogen is the 13th century founder of this branch of Zen, of Soto Zen, who I've translated a lot and written a lot about and talk about a lot. He talks about going beyond Buddha, that Buddha is not something that you, some experience or some understanding or some state that you reach and that's it, but that it's an ongoing living process of awakening. So this is related to this, going, but the sense of going beyond the teacher means also that the Zen tradition, based on Indian Buddhism, but starting in China and then Korea and Japan and now the United States, has to adapt to this present situation. So this is what we're all doing together here in Chicago, to find a way to make this tradition alive and relevant and real and helpful for us in our situation, and each of us in our own particular way. So this going beyond is important. The tenth on his list of strengths of Zen and the karma of Zen that we've inherited is aesthetic sensibility. Embracing art as practice. The practice of beauty. So, Dale said that all religions start with art in some way. And Zen has particular qualities of aesthetics and of art that were important to me personally. I had the chance when I was young to travel in Japan and go to see Buddhist statues and gardens and architecture in Kyoto and Nara, the old capitals, and that was very informative to me. And Zen has a tradition of, with the gardens, with painting, with calligraphy, with poetry of great art. He did mention the one limitation of Zen aesthetics, which is in the area of music, and this came up in the second conference, the Japanese conference. There's nothing like Bach or, you name it in terms of Western religion, Mozart or Coltrane, or, there's nothing like that in terms of Buddhist or Zen musical context. But it's something that can develop. So we have musicians in our sangha. But in the Japanese teachers' conference, a couple of examples that are pretty much unknown in the West were cited, and so there is some. And there's one tradition called shomyo, which is a very melodic kind of chanting. It's in the Soto Zen tradition in Japan. If any of you have heard the full moon ceremony, the repentance ceremony, that's an example of it. And there's another one called Baiko, which is maybe only a century or so old. It's particularly done by Japanese Soto Zen women in their temples, but using singing, but also a bell and a little drum or clapper. So there's potential there, but really that's one of the ways in which Zen does not compare to Western religious art. Anyway, but there is so much of the of aesthetic sensibility in the Zen tradition. The 11th and final strength that Dale cited was the literary tradition. The importance of narrative to spiritual practice, the importance of Zen stories, which talk about a lot here, and we have this, this huge literature of koans or teaching stories and comments on them and comments on the comments and comments on those comments. So Zen is supposed to be a tradition beyond or not caught by words and letters, and yet has produced this huge literature. And Dale was talking about the importance of narrative, of stories, of teaching stories in religion generally. So those are the lists he gave of what he sees as strengths of the karma of Zen that we've inherited. Not to name them all again, but just the importance of practice and taking practice seriously, rejecting otherworldliness, not being caught by a particular set of required beliefs, not being in conflict with science, the focus on freedom and playfulness and the sense of going beyond the aesthetic sensibility in the literary tradition. So I think it's a pretty good list of some of the strengths of Soto Zen, or of Zen, Soto included. Always coming back to practice, and we have this actual physical practice of sitting upright, facing the wall, facing ourselves, being present, calm but aware, relaxed but upright. And then all of these other aspects of the tradition flow out of that. I thought but he had a list of weaknesses of, somewhere I wrote down four. Oh yeah, no, there are four, excuse me. Weaknesses of the Zen tradition. And these are a little more complex. And actually, I kind of feel like we're not doing so badly on these. Even though they are weaknesses of the tradition, I feel like in terms of the teaching here at Ancient Dragon, we're not doing so badly. But these are weaknesses of the Japanese Zen tradition. The first one being morality. So this is complicated, but in most East Asian Buddhism, Buddhism didn't really focus on ethics and morality. Now, I think we do that more here. We talk about the precepts a lot, and Dogen, our founder, 13th century Japan, warned about the problems of karma. But in most East Asian Buddhism, there was a kind of sense of not focusing on that so much, partly because in that society, there was, in all of East Asia, a very strong background of Confucian ethics. And that was kind of assumed. So Buddhists thought they didn't really have to focus on that so much. It was part of the society. And this is, the Confucian ethics are complex, but they're the basis of all East Asian society. So it was there in the background. But as Dale said, that there was not a tradition of questioning morality and authority, which led to the moral blindness that allowed Zen and all the other forms of Japanese Buddhism to contribute to the militarism that led up to World War II. So Dale claimed that there was not in the Zen tradition enough of a focus on generosity, on moral deliberation, on justice and compassion, and that this is more present in the West, the sense of justice. And I think this is very, we've had Zen practice in America now for 50 years or so, and I think there's this idea of engaged Buddhism and incorporating a Western sense of justice and ethics is part of what we're doing. But if I look around at Americans, then maybe we're still a little overall not so clear about this. So I think it's a good kind of warning. Again, I'm covering a lot of material that was in this talk, and any bit of it that you want to bring up in the discussion, we can look at again. The second weakness, according to Dale, was the political. So he quoted Aristotle as saying that politics is morality writ large, and that there is a tendency in the Zen tradition to not take positions on justice issues, for example. And he saw this not taking positions in terms of social justice as a kind of failing of the Zen tradition. Of course, it's challenging how to respond to social issues, and those of you who've been here before know that I do that regularly, but how to do it respectfully, not just venting anger, how to actually look at the issues and respond with some meditative depth to the problems of the world. So from Dale's point of view, that's not enough, that's not a strength, that's a weakness in the Zen tradition we inherit, and I think he's right, and something that we need to look at. And many of you have heard me quote the tax status for religious nonprofits, as we are a 501c3, that I'm not supposed to advocate for particular candidates or legislation, but it's perfectly fine for us to talk about issues of social justice, the problems of our economy, the problems of all our militarism and wars, and even though I'm not going to mention any candidates, I would encourage you all very much to vote next month, very, very important election. But this is an area where there's a weakness in the tradition. The third one is very interesting, and he said it was a weakness in the intellectual aspect of religion, that people today, young people today, he teaches college, are looking for some kind of philosophy of life to put the pieces together, some comprehensive, sophisticated way of making sense of our world and of reality itself. And so he cited the part of the Japanese tradition which is kind of anti-intellectual, in its extremes, avoids reading even at all, and does not, and that rationality can be demonized. Well, I often talk about going beyond rationality, not to question how we know things, but as an academic and a scholar myself, I'm not anti-intellectual, and I hope we don't fall into that. But it is a weakness in the Japanese tradition. Dogen was very much very scholarly, and actually, of all the classic Zen masters who talk about not getting caught in words and letters, almost all of them had mastered the Buddhist scriptures and really knew them backwards and forwards. So it's a kind of funny issue, but there is some tendency. There's a temple I did a sesshin at in Japan where there are a lot of Westerners there and they're not allowed to read, period. If they get a magazine in the mail, it's confiscated. So, you know, there is still that aspect of that is not willing to look systematically at use intellect and rationality in presenting what I think we do have as a kind of comprehensive worldview that is part of Mahayana Buddhism and Zen. So I think there is intellectual work that can be done to support the principles that arise from our meditation. Anyway, that was his third. The fourth one, I'm not sure that I'm clear on, but maybe it's related to the last one. The sense of mystery. I mean, he cited this as a weakness of the Japanese Zen tradition. I don't know, I could see it as a strength too, but parts of that tradition. But the sense of the thought of enlightenment, the first impulse. So we have numbers of people here who sat Zazen for the first time this morning, which is wonderful. We had like 7 people here for Zazen instruction. That first thought of spiritual practice is considered in some way to include all of enlightenment or awakening. But in terms of how we expand our understanding of that and our experience of that and our expression of that, that's the going beyond is very important. And I think that maybe Dale was speaking more to traditions, the aspect of Zen that sees enlightenment as some one-time thing. So maybe I'm responding defensively to his list of weaknesses because I don't think they're as much part of our practice here. But still, that to realize that our awareness our meditative awareness requires growth and expansion, that it's a mystery that we need to continually, so this is an ongoing practice. There is always more to see and deepen and express about how we see reality and awakening itself. So we need to revise that. So, finally, based on this list of strengths and weaknesses, Dale had a list of half a dozen challenges, or we could say opportunities for American Zen. And these are also interesting and relevant to us, I think. So, thinking about Zen as it's been transplanted here, and we have 50 years of experience with American Zen. That's nothing. It took several centuries for Buddhism to settle in China, and then Zen helped evolve that after that. So, all of the struggles of the Sutras and Buddhist Association to see what are appropriate standards for American Zen teachers is part of this long process that, we'll know what works in a couple hundred years. And yet here we are doing this practice, trying to see, how do we meet the world and ourselves in this complexity right now? So the challenges and opportunities. One, I think, is very interesting. The tension between extraordinary individuals and, I feel like there's the history of Zen, the history of Buddhism, there are many extraordinary individuals. And, even in terms of our Sangha, many, many, many extraordinary individuals. But the tension between that and community, very important issue. How do we come together and work together as communities and as individuals? And the idea of individualism is so strong in our society that this is a really interesting place to work on. Sangha is very important. We couldn't do, we couldn't have long retreats or day-long retreats like we will next week. It's hard to do on your own. Having a group of people together, many people working, so, we're not part of some hierarchy like most Christian denominations, but we have a board and a practice council and people who take the position, the Doan positions and other positions, a head cook, director, treasurer. We have many people who take on a lot of responsibility to make this work collectively. Certainly not just about me as the teacher. My job is to sit up here and talk about this stuff, but other people will do as well. How do we fit together? I think, again, a challenge and an opportunity, particularly for us as Americans, to support individual awakening and practice, and also how we do it together in community. So it's a very interesting question. Related to that, maybe the second one Dale pointed to was the challenge of Zen self-mastery. And he talked about, the samurai tradition in Japan, a great discipline, self-discipline, very important, but that, as opposed to the bodhisattva tradition of compassion, gentleness and sensitivity. How do we fit those together? He said that one of the strengths of American Zen so far is its feminization, and I very much agree. We've talked about that here before, that the brilliance of the feminization of Zen that's happening in American Zen, where there are, I don't know what the percentage of teachers at this conference were who were women, but probably more women than men, I'm not sure. But certainly, pretty much on a par. And in Zen groups like this, women taking responsibility. So how do we, at the same time, have this self-discipline that's part of the samurai Zen tradition, and then this gentler side, the side of bodhisattva compassion? Another challenge is, some of these are related, but Zen and innovation. How do we see Zen freshly? So how do we see this fitting? This is related to actually the last one I'll mention in this context. To find what is the meaning of American Zen? That we are Americans, we're not Chinese or Japanese, even though we've inherited some of these forms. how do we make this American? So I think this is also part of the sense of innovation, that we need to try new things at the same time that we're taking care of, caring for this tradition of practice and teaching that we have. So these are challenges, significant challenges. Two more that he mentions. One is environmental activism. This is related to political activism, he says. But how do we find sustainable personal life and sustainable engagement with the world? And this is just based on, you know, which I and others here have talked about sometimes, the terrible danger to our environment now, the ice caps are melting, of climate change, of the horrible nuclear power and the wastes that are so deadly for so long, and the Fukushima meltdown. And anyway, there's so many challenges to our environment. And so how do we include that in our practice? Dale cited as a challenge and an opportunity for us. And then the last one, very, very important, how do we remain attentive to suffering? So this is the basis of the compassion of the Bodhisattva way, which then is part of universal liberation. But he also emphasized locally, how do we focus on attention to the suffering around us and within us? How do we stay open to our own loss and sadness and frustration and fear? How do we respond to that in ourselves and in people in our community and in the world locally? So Asian is sponsoring for our Sagaki ceremony a kind of food drive for the local food pantry to help people who were in need. And so I'll talk about that in the announcements. But that's just one example. So anyway, those are the challenges and opportunities that Dale mentioned. So that's a long list of stuff. But I think it's interesting in terms of giving us a context for thinking about what we're doing and how it fits in the tradition that we've inherited and how and where we're at in terms of that, in terms of making Zen American and going beyond the tradition at the same time that we take care of what's important in the tradition. So there's a lot of challenges there. And this applies to the Sangha, all of us together, and also to each of us on our own cushion or chair. How do we find our own strength and gentleness and expression of each in our own way of this awakening awareness that we connect with in meditation? So I want to have some open discussion, but before that, briefly, please, I wanted to call on Aishin, who was also as an associate member at the Soto Zen Buddhist Association meeting, not the second one, and then also on Roy to talk about the branching streams. So Aishin, anything that you want to add? Generally or not, you don't have to.
They were really great talks, and this was a wonderful talk to listen to, and it was a lot to take in, and I'm really grateful that you took such good notes. It was really wonderful to see, you know, a number of different teachers from different traditions within Soto Zen. You know, we can be very feel very, you know, insular and think that, well, okay, so this is, you know, we come here every week or whenever, however many times we come here, and feel like, okay, this is Soto Zen. And then to be practicing together in one place with people from all different kinds of traditions who bring different flavors. Some are living in a monastery in a semi-permanent way. Some are living in more residential centers. Some are, you know, thinking about doing some ministerial training or you know, kind of outreach like pastoral counseling. Some are, you know, more like us. And it was really great to hear the different perspectives of people whose you know, way of understanding Zen and experiencing Zen has been shaped very much by a different context than ours. So that was a really rich dialogue.
Yeah, it was a very rich experience to have all these teachers together and priests together. Thank you, Aishin. Roy is our work leader and a member of our board, and he represented us at the recent Branch and Streams meeting in Houston, which is a meeting of affiliate temples of the San Francisco Zen Center, Suki Roshi lineage. So maybe you could say just a little bit about that meeting for us, Roy.
Yeah, I felt very fortunate to be able to go down and spend some time with different people from different groups that had all come from the San Francisco Zen Center. I think there were maybe 8 to 10 different groups represented there, a goodly number of people. And it was sort of the inverse of that, in that, you know, there were different flavors of different groups and talking to them, but at the same time we had shared forms, shared ways of doing things. So I always have that feeling whenever you go in and sit with a group that comes from San Francisco Zen Center, it's always a sense of coming home because, you know, it's the same chance. Sometimes a little different translation, but, you know, same chance, same forms, same general approach. That was really lovely. Had a lot of conversations over 3 days about a number of topics. It sounds like ours was much more sort of concrete, you know, how do you do these sorts of things rather than kind of general theoretical. So it was as simple as, okay, how do we address couples where one is a practitioner, one isn't? How do we deal with children and the children of members? How do we deal with outreach community versus, you know, more internal focus and some things? So it was a very good, lively conversation, a lot of different approaches. Some of the overall themes that I sensed was that there are a few different sorts of venues for this practice. So we've got, you know, city centers, and sort of centers like this one. There are monastic practices, and there's sort of residential, which I think there's kind of a hybrid or in between, where it's less emphasis on the monastic, but it is people in residence there living there. And, you know, how do we practice in those different settings? And so there was different flavors, and but at the same time, very much of an emphasis on there isn't this sharp line between, you know, lay and clergy in this tradition, that American Zen is very much bringing the focus and practice down into individuals who are not necessarily going to wear robes and shave their heads. And so kind of blending that and softening those distinctions, the emphasis on real life with the practitioners and how we can make this more approachable for them. Interesting discussions on how much of this is the San Francisco Zen Center lineage kind of branching out into new areas and new communities versus those communities shaping and flavoring those Zen practice in those communities, and how much we speak to the needs of individual communities versus just bringing this preset practice to a community. You know, I would sort of think of it like, you know, is this like McDonald's, where you've got the same thing no matter what community you're in, or is this sort of like the, you know, Chicago pizza versus, you know, or, you know, versus Southwest, you know, California pizza. So those sorts of distinctions. And it was a wonderful meeting, met some really incredibly wonderful people, and made me feel very good about the tradition we're in, very good about the strength of it, the depth of practice of people, and I just had a wonderful time meeting them.
Thank you very much, Roy. So, you know, this gives a context, all of this, to what we're doing here, which is more what we usually focus on. But I want to just open this up. Any comments or questions or responses to any of it, any of Dale's strengths and weaknesses or challenges or anything else that's been said? And I appreciate many new people, and please feel free to ask, you know, basic questions too. Laurel.
Thank you so much. That was really
Very
a lot to absorb, as Patience said. I really resonated with the strengths. I love that it was 11 and not 10. and I also shared some of your defensive reaction to the flaws, or whatever they're called. But the part that I I'm most interested in thinking more about is the challenges and the opportunities, which I think are just very stimulating. And I would just suggest to all of us, to our board and to our practice council and anyone who's thinking about Ancient Dragon, that we, that this could be a really interesting ongoing conversation among us. There's not nearly enough time to even start talking about one of them today, but I find it very exciting and really appreciate you bringing those to us. Has he written things that we can read?
He has
He's
a
very, very cogent.
Yes, he is. He's very bright and very clear, and he has a very fine book out now recently on the six perfections. We've talked sometimes about the ten, but the first six are separate group. I think it's in our library, which...
You made a good book.
Yeah. Very practical oriented. This talk will be on our website amongst the other audio Dharma talks, so I'll recommend it to the groups you mentioned, but everyone. But do you want to just randomly pick up one of the things as challenges that struck you? We could say a little bit about.
Well, I mean, I'll just start with the one that's obviously related to what I do, which is connecting more to the natural environment in the way we act, in the way we practice, in the way we live our personal lives, in the way we talk, and just more explicit. It's all there. It's not like adding something different to the teachings. It's looking at the teachings through that lens is very rich, and the people that have done that, that I've discovered so far, have greatly magnified the meaning for me, and I think we've barely scratched the surface of that possibility in things like the poetry and all of the teachings. And when I was listening to Mary Oliver on the radio this morning, because I was driving somewhere else, and I'm thinking, she's a Zen poet. So wonderful. So anyway, that's just one example, but every single one of them seemed really interesting.
Thank you. Aisha.
I wanted to comment on the challenge of intellect, and you didn't mention something that I remember him saying, and I don't remember where it came, but I think it came here, because I think what he was talking about, his understanding of Zen as being sort of anti-intellectual, or the point that he was making, which I thought was great, and one of the points he was making was he said something along the lines of, you know, I think we can all agree that Einstein was not just experiencing monkey mind when he was coming up with the theory of relativity, and that there is a place for intellect, and yet. I think he maybe just didn't go far enough in thinking about this because although that's true, my understanding of Zen is that it is really deep and clear of intellect. It's not something that you can understand intellectually necessarily to be at a certain point. And my sense is that our culture is very wants to understand things intellectually, and we want to have points that we can take home and sound bites, and Zen doesn't give us that so much as it's more experiential. But I wouldn't say it was anti-intellectual. I guess what I was thinking in response, and what I think he actually said after saying Einstein wasn't just having monkey mind was the point is, how do we bring our Zen practice and experience and presence to our thinking? And so the point is maybe finding a way to bridge those two things rather than sort of dismissing Zen as being anti-intellectual.
Thank you. Yeah, and I'm just looking at my notes and add a couple of things. But yeah, I think he was talking about some part of the Zen tradition which historically has been anti-intellectual, and he's focusing on that as a kind of fundamentalist aspect of some branch of Zen. But one of the things he said that I think was very interesting is, from the perspective of Zen awareness, of meditative awareness, that we need to rethink the role of thinking. So to include the wider sense of awareness that we develop in meditation into how's thinking, as one of our ancestors said. Yes?
I think that, just listening to what you said, that is the foundation of the Americanization of Zen practice, how it integrates into our experience, is just in how we live our everyday lives, through the awareness that we gain through our meditation, we bring to how we deal with people who are less fortunate.
Yes.
And how we deal with the arts, or how we deal with sharing knowledge that we have with people who don't have the knowledge that we have, in terms of calling it intellectual, or whatever we want to call it. I think that's the Americanization that is incubating.
Yes, I agree. I would say, you know, as a Zen scholar or whatever, that it's there in our tradition, the sense of integrating the universal and the particular, the ultimate with this particular phenomenal realm. But, you know, maybe in Japan, Zen kind of got dusty and complacent, and we have this wonderful chance now, from our American perspective, to really vitalize that in terms of what you were saying, how we bring this into our world and into our everyday activity. So, yeah, I agree with you. Thank you.
One more thing.
Go ahead. Yeah.
As I was meditating during the practice today, I was thinking about the time. You know, I was thinking, okay, well, there's 35 minutes.
Yeah.
I better get it all in. You know?
Yes, right.
And then it dawned on me that you know, it's like one step after another. Just give it everything you have, and then the next chapter will unveil as to what you're supposed to do next. That's it, that's all.
That's great, yeah. Zen is lifelong learning, and historically, culturally, too. How do we meet new situations? And as I said to those who had Zazen instruction this morning, but I can't be said enough, to do this regularly at home in your spare time, it won't hurt you, you know, to, even if it's 20 minutes, 15 minutes, to take some time every day or several days a week at least to find this rhythm of just sitting and being present and going deeper and just being present and looking at what is it to be this body mind here. Yes, Bill, did you say?
Thank you for that talk. And would there be any way to hear the original talk, or will your talk be up on the website sometime soon?
Your voice, including everything I said this morning, will be on the website. I don't know how soon. That's up to Nathan. But yes, this talk will be on the website. I don't think that there was a recording of Dale's talk or of the SCBA conference, so you have to take it through my recollection and notes.
Yeah, it'd be so great to just have a day-long seminar just on your talk. There's so much there.
Well, maybe we'll do that. That's a good idea. We haven't done it. We've done sometimes like Saturday or Sunday afternoon seminars, so I'll take that under consideration.
We could do that at my university too, if you want.
Well, I'm welcome. If you want to come have me give a talk, I'd be happy to do that. But I'd like to do a seminar or something here too.
Sure. So can I just make a couple?
Please.
Raise a couple points. When you got to I forget which number it was in the strengths, but more or less the Japanese aesthetic, so
yes,
to speak, it seemed to me that could also be a point that's embodied in some of the other strengths, which is the minimalism of it, which I think is a very subtle thing, because it's like Zazen itself, where it's doing nothing, but it's also doing something. And one of the things it's doing is it's, to me, the big thing it's doing is it's disrupting, at least momentarily, and giving us an example of disrupting the buzzing, crazy commodity logic of our society.
Yes.
And that has actually many ramifications. So in a certain sense, I think the minimalism is something to kind of draw out and underline. And then I think it actually could be in the weaknesses as well, that this point about music. I mean, I'm a musician myself, and you know, I'm primarily a philosopher, but I take music very seriously. I practice every day, and I have thought about what is Soto Zen music in particular. Last night I went to a really great performance of Shostakovich's 10th Symphony that was at my school by the symphony there, and it was great. And of course I thought all the way throughout that this could never be Zen music. On the other hand, there's something to just embracing great music wherever it comes from.
Sure.
Whether it's, you know, John Coltrane or Beethoven or whatever. And but on the other hand, I think the minimalism is a good thing to think about again. And there's so many other great examples of aesthetic achievement from Japan and from and including Japanese classical music.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's interesting. You could not imagine somebody sort of wailing on the, you know, shakuhachi the way John Coltrane wails on the, you know, the instrument just would not bear that. And there's something to learn from that, I think. So that's maybe a direction to think about in terms of music. And then just lastly, very quickly, you know, I'm basically a political philosopher, and I think there's something on that second weakness about politics, or maybe it was the third, that
second, yeah.
This relationship between ethics and politics, that, yes, there, in Aristotle there's something to think about politics being ethics writ large, but there's also something about ethics being politics written small, because there's sort of a problem where if you think about ethics and try to get to politics, you won't get there, because there's not a more general thinking of the shape of the polis, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's actually a weakness of how the weakness was articulated.
Maybe so. Yeah, thank you for all your comments.
Thank you.
No problem. You're right. We should have a seminar just on this talk. We'll do it. Maybe not in the next couple of months, but I won't forget. We're already running late significantly, but I want to say one thing about the aesthetics part. And I, with all total respect to Zen minimalism, and we have in our Sangha various people who are John Cage, from the John Cage School of Zen. First of all, in terms of Zen music, we're going to have to develop an American Zen music. It will happen. And I think of, you know, Coltrane and, you know, jazz people as being great bodhisattvas, you know, and reading about that. But there are different sides to the aesthetic. So recently somebody complained about that we're starting to have too many things in the Zendo, too many art objects in our temple. And I gave a talk, I'm not sure if it's up on the website yet, about all of the different objects in this Zendo and on the altar as Dharma, as teaching. So there's the minimalist aesthetic, which I really like. But if you go to Japanese and generally to East Asian Buddhist temples and otherwise, you can see, you know, very colorful displays of lots of visual stuff. There's a kind of dance of so I just want to say there's a kind of dance of Dharma, visual Dharma, and that includes a sense of minimalism and a sense of play in space. So it's a complex topic, but I appreciate your comments. We are running way over time, but I want to, but if anybody else has something you want to say, let's do one more. Yes,
Norman. Thank you. Really great. I think I was struck again. I appreciated the entire talk, teaching. In particular, being newer on the path of Buddhism, the gentle reminder that in the States, 50 years is not that long. For me in particular, personally, having left an ordination track in a Christian tradition and having to gently remind myself that this is a long, ongoing process of learning, that I'm not always going to get or understand everything so quickly. And some of it, the beauty of having to, I know that I don't have to abandon from where I came, but still that integration that's happening for me, and just an appreciation of things unfolding in the time that they're meant to be. I sometimes feel like I'm pushing, I think, to understand or know, and there's just some things that I won't understand or know. And sort of the opportunity for growth in Buddhism in America. And like I said, leaving behind some of the, not leaving behind, but I'm very familiar with places within Presbyterian, for instance, from which I came in, and this is how this process worked. We're knowing this person or this, and I don't know these things here. So just an appreciation.
Thank you very much for your comments. Yeah, part of what we're doing, trying to bring the Bodhisattva way and the Zen tradition into our lives, individually and collectively, is that it's a long, it's an endless process. It's lifelong learning of how do we bring the practice alive. And it's not, even though we shouldn't, you know, be anti-intellectual or be irrational about it, it's okay, you know, to understand it is possible and important, but there are different levels of understanding, and what's very important is patience. That this is a process, that we're not practicing just for ourselves, that we're practicing for people in Chicago 50 years from now and 250 years from now, really. And so, and all of our Western traditions, of which numbers are represented here in this room today strongly, you know, there's a way to integrate that into this practice. Thank you very much.